This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. H.L. Mencken is often regarded as one of the most influential and controversial American writers of the early 20th century. His outrageous language, sense of humor, and strong commentary established him as an outspoken and widely read pundit. He wrote about a range of topics from the Scopes Monkey Trial to the state of the American South. He drew many admirers and at least as many critics, but my guest today argues that whether you love or hate Mencken, it is important to examine his work and lasting legacy, especially in light of the current state of American journalism. Hal Crowther is a North Carolina-based journalist and essayist and joins me in the studio now to talk about his new book, An Infuriating American, The Incendiary Arts of H.L. Mencken. Hal, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Hey, great to be back, Frank.
You like this guy a lot.
I wouldn't say I liked him.
You admire him.
Yeah, I respect him. I respect what he did, and I'm awed, you know, by what he accomplished. He wasn't the sweetest man in the world. As a matter of fact, it's not exactly a Christmas book, unless it's Scrooge or Marley that you're...
You got warts in here. You got warts on the book. That's good. And so, but tell us about it, about your impressions of Mencken and his importance on the American scene.
Well, he was one of those people with an enormous ego who had the opportunity to express it on a larger stage. There are a lot of people who may be that opinionated and a very few people who may be that eloquent. But it's very fortunate that he had the Patterson family who ran the Baltimore Sun, who really gave him free rein. The only time when they backed down is when he supported the Kaiser in World War I. And I think the streets of Baltimore were full of people who wanted to burn down the Baltimore Sun and lynch Mencken in the street. I think at one time they even had a safe house where Mencken would be in case they found out that he lived at 1524 Holland Street. But he was sort of unleashed, and America wanted to hear something like this, somebody who had no respect for church or state or really any of the conventions that the middle class lived by, and made fun pretty much of everyone. He was a bipartisan hater. He loathed Democrats, Republicans, all races and ethnic groups.
Yes, equally and with equal venom and vitriol. Well, give us his backstory, because you talked about his sort of being an iconoclast and counter sort of middle class values, and yet he came from a pretty privileged family.
Yeah, his father actually was one of the owners of the Washington Senators, the baseball team, owned a large tobacco warehouse and cigar manufacturing operation. And Mencken admitted that he was pampered, raised, as he said, fat and sassy and never sort of missed a meal. And the anger in Mencken, he claimed it wasn't anger. He claimed it was just he was amusing himself by amusing by abusing, and I think, everyone's analyzed that, why he was so ferocious, since he was in no sense downtrodden himself. I don't think anyone's exactly solved that. Some people are just kind of born with a chip on their shoulder and have that kind of ego that has to sort of best everyone and sort of get back at anyone who might think that they're superior. He was clearly one of those characters.
Didn't go to college or didn't finish.
No, he was valedictorian of his high school class at the age of 15 in Baltimore. And his father suggested that he might like to go to law school at Johns Hopkins. He was not interested. He worked for his father for a couple of years. And then when his father died, he immediately went downtown and sold himself to the morning paper.
Any indication that this had been a lifelong ambition, albeit a short life up until then? But
he said that it was what he always wished to do, and he'd actually been taking correspondence courses in fiction writing and journalism when he was still a teenager.
And he gets there and he does some reporting right away. He's not a columnist.
At one point he had a column very early on, I think even before he was 20 years old. But he also was the assistant city editor and, in charge of local news and so on for a while.
He really makes his reputation. Does he? Would you say he made his reputation on his reporting on the Scopes Monkey Trial, or had he had it by then?
He had a pretty big reputation. He had a national audience already. He'd been published also in the New York Herald as well as in the Sun papers. And he'd also had the magazine, the Smart Set, that he ran with George Jean Nathan. But it was the Scopes trial where he basically, said to Orthodox Christians, you are just a bunch of damn fools. And, you know, blanket condemnation. Yeah. I think he said that he went to Dayton, Tennessee, laughing and came back trembling from the intensity and ignorance of these fundamentalists. And no one had really had the nerve to do it like that before.
He extended his strong feelings to the American South as well. Maybe I can ask you to read an excerpt from Mencken's own writing contained in your book, An Infuriating American, Hal Crowther, that gives us a sense of both the style and the intensity of his writing.
Well, the South was, famous, it's called the Sahara of the Beaux-Arts, that he published in 1917, I believe. So then he was, 37 years old. Mencken, I'm scrambling, as you can see, because I had this piece in the front. It's somewhere here.
Well, the book is called An Infuriating American, The Incendiary Arts of H.L. Mencken. He had no patience for or love for the American South, and you're about to hear that as Hal Crowther reads.
Well, this gives you a sense of the kind of language that no one else wrote and that no one had really heard, I think, before Mencken. Down there, Mencken is talking about us. He's talking about the South. Down there, a poet is almost as rare as an oboe player. This is indeed amazing to contemplate so vast a vacuity. One thinks of interstellar spaces, of the colossal reaches of the mythical ether. Nearly the whole of Europe could be lost in that stupendous region of worn-out farms, shoddy cities, and paralyzed cerebrums. And yet, for all its size and all its wealth, everything that it babbles of in terms of progress, it is almost as sterile artistically, intellectually, culturally as the Sahara Desert. There are single acres in Europe that house more first-rate men than all the states south of the Potomac. If the whole of the late Confederacy were to be engulfed by a tidal wave tomorrow, the effect upon the civilized minority of men in the world would be but little greater than that of a flood in the Yangtze.
So he didn't like it. But this is the thing about Mencken. I want you to talk about this because on the one hand, he is in this period in American history, this emerging now popular media, right? Mass media is just taking on. Newspapers are becoming very popular and important. He is a champion of free speech.
Absolutely.
But these blanket statements, the American South, I mean, all of the South, that doesn't strike me as terribly, you know, intellectual. It doesn't strike me as terribly smart.
Well, he was very smart, but he painted with a very large brush. And I think one point in here I said that he hunted with an elephant gun, and whether he was aiming at an elephant or a squirrel, you know, if you hit the squirrel with the elephant gun, there is not much left for the reader. His style was to be as offensive and as forthright and as absolutely sweeping as possible. And that's, of course, the style that many people have imitated down to this day. If you will, even morons like Rush Limbaugh have that bombast that they really borrowed. They may not know it. They may not have read Mencken. But the sense of, you know, I could outthink you with one arm tied behind my back. Mencken was the first person who came out with that bluff in America. It's like, I know more than you do. I talk better than you do. I write better than you do. You know, try to fight back if you can. And he was fearless, absolutely fearless.
Fearless. So what was it? What does it tell us, I guess, about that moment in American history that made him, when he was the most influential and a very popular writer, that was something that captured the American imagination?
He was extremely popular. I mean, more, you know, better read, I think, than any other journalist ever in this country, in terms of the percentage of people who were reading, you know, intelligent material, that he had them all. I think one way I tried to explain it is that back during the prosperity of the 20s, a lot more middle class people were being exposed to good universities and liberal arts and the arts and so on. And Mencken was there with these attitudes that they'd never tried on before. And he was the great champion of, you know, the young college guy who wanted to be hit a fashionable person and kind of ignore what he'd heard from his parents and his teachers and his local minister. And Mencken was kind of the guru. He was leading the parade to this this future, you know, this unafraid future. And he really caught on. And one time, I think, you know, reading Mencken, my grandfather told me that he was the wisest man of his generation, and I think they were only 8 years apart. But at one time, it was a measure of whether or not you were literate, whether you were reading Mencken.
So it was this free thinker. It was the idea that we can be totally free and independent, even of the institutions. Because, as you say, he was the champion of this young free thinker who might have been coming through college, but no champion of the academy itself.
He loathed the academy almost too much. I mean, you almost have to say that he protested too much because he never matriculated. I mean, that's one of the things that you, if you read all his work, you become somewhat suspicious the 10th time that he says that all PhDs should be taken out in the alley and hit over the head with a hammer. It goes a little bit too far. But he felt that he had become an intellectual of real substance and certainly of real power without any help from the universities. And basically he's saying, you know, step out and learn and read and write and think, and you don't need these people, these receptacles of ancient wisdom.
And that kind of bootstraps, independent, do-it-yourself, pioneer spirit is really something that would capture the American imagination almost uniquely.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, he was a kind of a libertarian of an antique style. The thing that he feared most was that, you know, he hated democracy. He hated democracy because he was afraid that people who had money and power and so on could manipulate voters, which they do and did, in order to take freedoms away from H.L. Mencken.
I think that's it, because interestingly, when you read his contempt for democracy and how the unwashed masses will lead us only to mediocrity, it's the ultimate expression of narcissism. It's like H.L. Mencken has the formula here, and you all aren't smart enough to figure it out. All of you. I mean, it's hard to really – he's a talented writer. I don't know that I'd want to have him for dinner, if you know what I mean.
Well, his arrogance is quite remarkable, but you also have to wonder to what extent it was a pose that amused him. Mm-hmm. The excellent biography of Mencken that was written by Fred Hobson over at UNC found many letters that Mencken wrote that said that at times he was depressed and lonely and disappointed in himself. But this certainly never came across in anything that he published.
Whatever we think about the man, you say it's important to understand his legacy, particularly in light of journalism then and now.
Well, the enormous power of a single person in those days who was taken as an authority by millions and millions of people. Of course, there were fewer people involved in those days. Fewer people were literate. There were, you know, a much smaller population in general. The pie was much smaller, and his slice was so huge. And it's almost impossible for us to imagine, but he had this terrible vendetta with FDR, the most powerful man, I guess, in the world at one time. And they went back and forth at each other. And every morning, FDR would look in the paper to see what Mencken had written. And I would say that there is no person in a long, long, long time who's inspired that kind of fear in Washington. And when you look at it now, that we have a million voices, which is great from a Democratic view. And I can hear Mencken spitting when but he loved, you know, the idea that everyone can blog, can be heard, can get on social media. We have a million voices, but we have no voices that we necessarily trust.
Well, what would you say is, I mean, was he influential in your career? And if so, how?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's a wonderful quote in here from the Black Boy, where Wright was saying that how could anyone be courageous enough to use words as weapons that way? You know, it was almost like if you could do that, you could beat your way out of the cage. You know, this is a black man way back when things were very, very bad for African Americans in this country. And I felt the same thing. I was from a small town, very limited horizons at one time. And just the idea that somebody could say this, that somebody could make fun in the most outrageous terms of anyone and get away with it, I think you know, since then there's been an awful lot of running with the pack, an awful lot of fear of being excluded among journalists. In other words, like the Washington Press Corps, which I worked with at one time and do not especially respect, because they are really afraid of losing their sources. So they kind of hang in packs and you know, see if they can get something out 4 seconds ahead of the competition. And Mencken would have just and did snarl at that kind of thinking.
I'm talking with Hal Crowther today on The State of Things. His new book, An Infuriating American, The Incendiary Arts of H.L. Mencken. Well, what would you say to those critics who would say, sure, he gives you the courage to, first of all, when you read his writing, you understand the power of words, and he gives you the courage then to use those words as your way out. But what would you say to those that say his legacy is, in fact, Fox News? It is unsubstantiated, powerfully expressed opinion without a lot of foundation. It's just kind of what I think.
Well, you could certainly link the arrogance and the sort of saying that my opinion is all that's worth a damn. But you got to remember also that he was working within a framework of traditional journalism. Maybe the fact that the Pattersons unleashed him made him a special case. But all during my career until, you know, I became the editor in Raleigh a few years ago, I had levels of editors to check me everywhere along the line. I think the difference now is that first of all, there are people who have a particular line that they want to sell, once again, speaking of Fox News, and on the left as well, where they're selling a certain line. And there are other people who are just trying to attract readers or eyeballs or whatever, ears in the case of radio, by saying things that they think people want to hear. And I think, Frank, that may be the worst thing of all that's happened recently, is that people find the stories, the accuracy and the power and the relevance of the story to be a lot less important than how many hits it might get. In other words, we won't check this thing too carefully because they love it.
Yeah. Yeah, or it's not important, but it's gonna capture eyeballs. So if the lead story today is militarization of police, but I think cats are going to get the clicks, I'm going to put cats on the webpage. So that's also it. So was he disturbed as his popularity waned, or when he was attacked for some of his political beliefs?
Well, he realized that he'd made a big mistake being so pro-German that he didn't come out against Hitler in 1930, when almost everyone else understood what was going on. They were waiting for Mencken, because he was still the most powerful writer in America in the late 30s. They were waiting for Mencken to come out, and he did not. He did eventually, but it was too late. I mean, by the time there was war in Europe and so on, he just lost a great deal of credibility. And, of course, it hurt him a great deal. I mean, if you're the Pied Piper and you look over your shoulder and you don't see anybody, and he'd been the Pied Piper for a long, long time.
Well, and you said that he's sort of an equal opportunity hater and that he took down all ethnic groups. But can we excuse his anti-Semitism and his racism? I mean, it was overt racism, overt anti-Semitism.
I would say explicit in terms of it was printed. There was nothing that he ever did that, as a matter of fact, he was well known for trying to get Jews out of Europe with his own money in the late 30s and so on. Almost all of his associates and friends, except for doctors, he was a hypochondriac who had a doctor of every specialty among his in-group, you know. But almost all of his closest friends, his publisher, his partner, they were all Jews. And they all died saying that they never heard him say one bigoted thing in his life.
But he wrote those things.
I mean, Alfred Knopf, his publisher, was loyal to him to the end and said, I'd never heard Henry say a bigoted thing. And, of course, 30 years later, he published, you know, these journals, and it's full of all these Santa. He was a weird man. But you also have to remember that he was publishing blacks, women, and Jews when that was difficult back in the 20s and 30s. In his magazines, he absolutely never had a closed door. He was the greatest enemy of lynchers and the Ku Klux Klan and all of the ugly things that were happening in the South. He detested that thing that I read about, you know, making fun of you know, the arts in the South. Right. He also denounced in that same essay the Ku Klux Klan and the lynchers and so forth.
Hal Crowther is the author of An Infuriating American, The Incendiary Arts of H.L. Mencken. Thanks so much, Hal.
Well, thank you, Frank. You got me defending him more than I thought I would.
Well done. There's more just ahead. Stay tuned to The State of Things.